trying to, we were informed that the DG is in the cabinet meeting now, but the DPG is here. She's here, she's then now going to be leading the delegation. So that's why we were just busy with something. Again, welcoming everybody. I'm also understand that we've all got the copies of the agenda for today, which as you were those members that were in the meeting last time, that we were looking into the appointment of the space agency. There were issues that were raised in the last meeting by honorable members. And among those was the issue of the absence of people with disabilities and the left. And then the decision of the meeting was that the department must go and look into that, but also the honorable member Mshumi from the African National Congress, who raised that, must then have a one-to-one talk with the DG so that the minister is then being advised. But what was then put across was that in future we must ensure that when there are boards that are being advertised, both the department and the people with disabilities must try and ensure that they respond and check people with those requirements in terms of the address. But before we can then allow the DPG to respond in terms of the list, can we just get a report of what is then the department saying on the issue of people with disability? Over to you, please.
Thanks, Chair, and members of the committee. As you've been informed, the meeting with the portfolio committee to consider the shortlist for the South African National Space Agency Board was held on the 21st of October 2009. And the department has presented that shortlist. The portfolio committee raised the concern that the shortlist does not have a sufficient representation of disabled candidates, and we had to go back with the recommendation from the portfolio committee that the DSC must approach one of the disabled people's organizations. This is what we did. The DSC consulted the Disabled People of South Africa, DPSA, and requested that they nominate a candidate be considered as a potential candidate to the SAMHSA board, the Space Agency Board. And Chairperson, as you have noted, in future the DSC will make a specific request in future to such organizations to make nominations so that they integrate into the process. We received the nomination from the Disabled People of South Africa, and that nomination was Mr. Vincent Gore. What has been forwarded to the Portfolio Committee is his CV, but to just give you a short profile, he's the CEO of Resource Packing Proprietary Limited. Background qualifications, he has a Bachelor of Science degree in Electrical Engineering, his field of expertise of course in engineering, and in what you would appreciate, politics and management. He's a male, and I remember Mr. Vincent Gore being a white man. Sorry, he was brown on this. And I think there's been a mistake in the DSC's briefing here. And once we've received that nomination, we forwarded the profile, CD and so on, to the panel that had sat on the selection process for shortlisting board members. And they have accepted the nomination. So we are requesting that the Portfolio Committee consider for inclusion Mr. Vincent Gore to the South African National Space Agency Board.
Thank you, DG. That's the report. Honorable members, can we get a response?
Thank you. I don't know who's TV recorded, but I definitely get a copy of it. I would also just, because Conservative did raise last week, and I'd like to raise it again here. And I know that I suggested to the TV last week that is it legal to actually include, what's the legality of including a person into the process after the deadline is closed? Will this appointment pass muster legally? And I think that I'd like for that to be considered as well. Because it's now unfair to other people who have other criteria. You may feel that they weren't personally approached, or their organisation wasn't personally approached. I just fear that we may be opening ourselves to some kind of challenge here. I know of Mr. Gore, who was a member of Parliament. He is a credible person, and I would have, under normal circumstances, it would have happened if I'm expecting him. But I'll just have a problem about it again.
Thank you, Chairperson. My understanding is that even when we approach a cabinet, the process evolves in such a way that a gap may be identified and a requirement be put to the department to use a particular track to search for an appropriate additional candidate. Mm-hmm. And it's not guaranteed the shortlist until we've got right to the end and we've taken into account cabinet and parliamentary recommendations on how we get as inclusive a representation as possible. I think what I would request is that the portfolio committee considers the process that has been followed, and that is the approach to the recommended organizational type. The portfolio committee recommended that we approach disabled persons organizations, which we have done, and we've taken the route of the umbrella type organization, not a specific disabled person grouping. And in that respect, I think we've met the requirements.
Honorable Chikovic? I have concern of the member over there in terms of the legality and so on, but I just think maybe in the future what we need to do is also be uplifted on our minds. When we look at vulnerable groups for boards and whatever, so that we start the process right at the beginning and not at the end when the shortlist comes and we recognize that we're black people and that we're people with disabilities, you know. So I think we must just keep it at the back of our minds so that we don't run into a similar situation later on in the 44.
Thank you, Honourable Kobas. In fact, that's what we stressed in the last meeting. With that, I will assume that he's a South African as a member of government. With that, can we then, I'm off to understand that today, our meeting today is to then to finalize. Can we, I don't think there are any, I wouldn't think that there are any new issues that members will raise, except that now the department will then if there is anything that I saw, Masri, your hand was up, can I afford an opportunity?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I would like to alert the board that there has been a further development which shouldn't create a blockage in the process, but the board needs to just be aware of it. This was something that could happen at any point along the route. And that is that one of the candidates has withdrawn her position as on the shortlist. Her husband apparently has received a posting abroad, and she will be following him through. That is Ms. Justin Lintislaw. She has requested that she be removed from the shortlist. What happens is, it is a shortlist of 25, so we're not entirely compromised. We can actually proceed. And we do understand that from time to time, board members may withdraw for whatever reason. Thank you.
Thank you very much, 3G. Now, are we off
I will then put across the house for us to agree for the report to go to the house. Honourable Smith.
Yeah, Chair, just to say, I think the department has done a better job this time than it did with the HSRC. So I think it's a good list, and I would welcome the addition that we proposed. On the basis of that, I suggest we adopt it and extend it forward.
Thank you. I would just like to raise the concerns that I raised last week. Is the presence of a large number of people with military experience on the shortlist. We do include ourselves to people use of space. Commit ourselves to basically using space for the socio-economic development of the country. And if I have any influence with the minister at all, would like her to wait the final board according to people's earth science qualifications and communications experience at the expense of the military people. I'd also like, I presume the department has done this summit as well, that there is one person on here, Philip Bellani, who was also presented for the SABC board, didn't make it, probably because he didn't sit for his interview. Once one of these guys, especially trying to get himself on the board, they're happy to throw the bottom of it. There are a couple of people, I think, a week, and wonder why they're there. We have a man who's a consultant for body products, hair products, and I don't know what value he brings, but no doubt the minister will need those funds even out. I do have concerns about, as I said, the military presence here, and so the DA will be reserving position on this list until we have eyes of people from our six in the office to change the college program. I couldn't get considered from our corporate then, so the DA will be reserving position on this.
Well, we have got a person that the Honourable Smith has moved for the adoption of the list. There is a procedurally we must get a second to that, was it also another position in terms of having reservations on the issue. Can I get to the Honourable Members if there is any, was it for two positions now? That of the Honourable from the IP and that from the Honourable from the CA. Honourable
Chair. No, we don't have another position with that. So we support the approval of the list.
We will then note the CA's reservation. I think it's reservations that were also raised last week with the DG, and I was also understanding that when the DG explained the inclusion of this, why they are to be there, I would have thought that I think parties have got the right to further raise their concerns, but we have noted that, and I think the department have also noted that. We'll take that over to the minister.
I'm just wondering, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5
voting members. Are we still? In fact, I was really going to raise that we have got a challenge of a quorum. We are 6. Can I make a proposal? I hope that's allowed. Is that we'll go to point number 2. If by the time we finish the meeting we are making the quorum, we then come back to point number 1 to formally adopt. By that time I think we will have the quorum. Agreed? Okay. All right, with that, can we then go to point number 2,
where Ms. Marjorie is going to socio-economic partnership. But before that, can I check, is everybody within the list here? Mr. David, Mam Kola, and Ms. My apologies for the pronunciation. Malapani? Malukhulwan. All right. Okay. Thank you. All right. Over to you, PPP.
Thank you, Chief. And I must start off with the apologies which you've already expressed for the Director General. What he has assured me is that it looks as though the meeting is going to finish around about 6:30. And so he will try his level best to join us as soon as he is freed up. He believes the meeting may end, that meeting may end earlier. And then having said that, just by way of introduction, Maliko Wane is our CFO, and she is with us, and she will be talking primarily to the issues on finance, the financial component of the annual report. And then we've got Mr. David Makwole. I'm also getting confused with some of the names. And David is our important one on the governance side. And as you are aware, that governance includes not only internal to DSC, but external to institutions as well. So he will assist with that kind of responses. If I can then proceed to the presentation of the annual report and thank the Portfolio Committee for this opportunity. I have structured the presentation around the key objectives of the department, a quick overview of the programs in DSC, selected indicators and the related performance, service delivery highlights, financial performance of the department, which as I said, Maliko Wane will talk to, human resources information, performance by entities reporting to DSC. That will be a quick snapshot because we are aware that the time councils themselves will be reporting individually to you on their annual report. And if I may use this opportunity, this is where even the space agency in the future will be tabling its business plan and its annual report before the portfolio committee. Even when we get that balance right with the military participation on the board. And then we will have a quick conclusion. Now, in terms of the objectives, the first one actually speaks to the twin objectives that the DSC has adopted since 2002 with the R&D strategy and now in the senior innovation plan. That is, our key objective is to impact on the economy and also impact on society or quality of life. So we say that the objective is to develop the innovation capacity of the science system to contribute to social economic development. And in order to do that, then we have a cascading set of objectives. We intend doing this by developing the appropriate human capital for research, development, and innovation. So human capital is a priority. We cannot do this unless we have another objective of building world-class R&D research, development, and innovation infrastructure. Sometimes what categorizes a developed country from an underdeveloped country is the sophistication of their research and development infrastructure. It's also our ambition to position South Africa as a strategic international research, development, and innovation partner and a destination. There's one here that has collapsed into the other one. A final one is to develop South Africa's knowledge generation capacity. So not just developing human capital for the sake of having qualified professionals, but also to ensure that they become engaged in this generation of new knowledge which is reflected in publications and patents. The structure then, as I said, is a set of programs inside the department. We have corporate services and governance, and then we have program two, which is a focus on research, development, and innovation. And we very often distinguish program two from program five. economic partnerships in the context of innovation later and innovation now. So you'll generally find in program two, you have all of your research, development, and innovation activities that support long-term research where the results will bear fruit in about 10 to 15 years. Socioeconomic partnerships in program five, on the other hand, invest primarily in activities that can generate results within a 2 to 3 year time frame, sometimes five, but generally in the short to medium term. Program three then is international cooperation and resources, and it interfaces with the other programs very strongly because you cannot have international partners unless they engage in the respective research areas of the department. And then human capital and knowledge systems are set up as a separate program because we consider that such a vital objective that we needed to have a dedicated program facilitating that. Now, in the corporate strategy, as well as the E&E chapter for the department, we set ourselves specific targets, and what we've done in the annual report is to list out some of those selected indicators and give you a sense of what has been the actual performance against those targets. One target was to leverage a higher amount from international resources. And in actual fact, our target had been to move from the 94 million which we had leveraged, pulled in from abroad into this country on science and technology activities, to increase it to 150 million. We are pleased to report that we exceeded that target. We recorded in our annual report 189, but we're actually able to say to you now that in this recent period, more than 358 million has been leveraged. So our program seems to be performing quite well. The number of new bilateral projects, also in the international realm, but giving a specific perspective, they've actually been able to generate about 100 or so bilateral projects. And this has been an increase from previous years. So there's a steady rise. Those figures may look a little bit confusing, but in the context of what were targets that were set, what has been in the running, and what right now we can actually say has come in. Members of Parliament will understand that even in the financial context, the year ends and you register what came in. But there's usually a period after the financial year when you get invoices and you get receipts. And so when we factor all of these closures and projects that have been concluded with international partners, we can safely say under actual performance that it's 162 new bilaterals. This is why even in the earlier figure there was the 338. On the number of students, I would also caution not to try and map the figures too closely. We try to give a little bit more clarification under the actual performance column. From the previous year, there were 280 students on a special bursary program. This is to thicken that pipeline, that see the type of students coming through to into the research chairs and so on. There have been 280 students in the past year. We ramped that up to 415. And when we break down the 415, 271 were the honors level, and 50 were master students that were awarded bursaries. We are aware that Treasury also has a particular leaning, you know, to almost give DSC more money for special science and technology related bursaries and so on the human capital side. The number of interns supported. We have a program that should facilitate about 100 interns within the DSC. But as you can see in the final year, there was 174, and we can actually say this target has been way exceeded. Some of it is generated out of perhaps even the new funding we received from international partners, and some of it from leverage from partnerships with other government departments and so on. But we've way exceeded the target. Meeting an expectation we make of ourselves that our land must go further than you find anywhere else in the world. What DST has from the Treasury, we must be able to leverage other resources to push up the output and the impact that we have. We have 7 centers of excellence that existed from the 2006 first steps that we established, and there's been an inclusion of an additional one. That has been
launched. Jim, may I ask a question of clarity?
Yes.
I'm just confused in whether you're speaking to the 2008-09 target or the actual performance. For example, the very one you're talking about now, the target is 8, and it says actual is 1 additional. That means to be 9. But it's not 9, it's still 8. Is that right? The same thing with the previous one. You're saying, the way I understood you this speaking, I might have misheard you. The 174 was being presented as the amount achieved against the 100, whereas it doesn't say that. So I
think, if I may, Jefferson, I appreciate now where the mistake has been. The 2008-09, that column should actually come under actual performance. So it gives you a reflection of additionality coming from the previous year. The previous year, 7 or 8, we were at 68. And we've now racked up to 174. So we should have actually included that last column under actual performance.
Sorry,
I apologize.
Would that also then apply, sorry, to the previous one, the number of students in the nursery program? You mean, well, it says there's 271 honors and 50 masters and 321. You're saying actually 415 were achieved.
Yes, there was, but if you put that under actual performance, there's a total of 415, but we're saying in that whole 415, there was 271 honours and 50 masters. So we're saying by the time we got past the junior degrees, what we call our higher degrees of going towards your research degree, there was a total of 321. So the 321 is not junior degrees like bachelor's and so on. And of that 321, 271 was honors and 50 masters. This is consistent also with what we see in terms of that pattern, that the higher they go, you find decreasing numbers. And it's something we're trying to address. In one respect, we increase the size of the bursary. You know, so this one calls them sometimes special bursaries. So we want to try and retain them in their study program to go right up to the doctoral level. Is that okay?
I'm sorry to be difficult. Okay, I'll withdraw. But it's just that when I look at the annual report, it actually also is making the same error, and I hate to think the annual report is wrong. It's also indicating those figures are targets for the year and rather than achievements for the year. I still remain confused, but I'll listen.
Okay. I think it was in the design of the schedule. Yeah. Okay. So if we can move there. The total number of research chairs that were established, we still, as the year ended for 2008-09, had 72. But there was work in the pipeline with NRS to award a further 10. And those 10 were awarded just past the financial year date, but it was from money that had been made available to the NRS in the year under review. So we would like you to note that we're not still on 72. We actually have an additional 10 that have come online. And of those 10, I'm happy to report that 6 are in the social sciences and humanities area, an area that we felt is somewhat neglected. And then we look at
so that means we have 82.
We have 82. The number of PhDs and postdoctoral fellowships supported at science councils and higher education institutions. We record for this year 155, and of those, 102 of the bursaries were awarded for PhDs and postdoctoral fellowships. Members of Parliament will note that we have a special PhD program because we are attempting to push through the number of doctoral graduates. That is a specific program which we are ramping up. number of joint science and technology project activities between the DSC and other departments, 14, and of those, 8 are new joint projects. Some have been, let's say, continuing from the previous year, last year 6, but the remaining 8 are new initiatives that have been launched with system departments. The number of flagship projects supporting strategic areas of research, we continue with the 11 from 2008, and there's 2 additional ones. So the 13 is not additional, it's a cumulative total. That is the clarity I can provide on that one. Now, in the remaining slides, I'm going to talk specifically about some highlights from the different program areas. Under your corporate services and governance, this program is responsible, together with the executive, for the overall management of the Department of Science and Technology. And aside from your generic corporate services on finance and so on, there's also the responsibility to provide central support to funded organizations like our science councils to comply with good governance practices and to ensure alignment with the strategic focus of the National System of Innovation. There's a dedicated program of work on monitoring and evaluation of science councils. So we have the generic corporate services, but the DSC, because 99% of the budget is related to transfers to these entities, we have to have also a dedicated focus in that program on the governance aspect. We can confirm that key performance indicator reports were completed and the overall report on the performance of all the science, engineering, and technology institutions was compiled. And this is something that members of Parliament can actually ask the department at a later stage to come and present on. What we are very, very proud of is that we received an unqualified audit opinion with the Auditor General reporting that no significant findings have been identified on performance information. And I'm sure members of Parliament will note that an announcement was actually made, or it was recognized, that the DSC is the only department in government that receives an unqualified audit report. If I move very quickly then to program 2, the objective of this program is to provide policy leadership in long-term and cost-cutting research and innovation. And we have a dedicated focus in this program on space science, hydrogen and energy, innovation instruments and planning, and biotechnology and health. As I've indicated earlier, one of the distinguishing factors is this is where all of our what we call blue flag and long-term research interventions are included. If we move then very quickly to some of the achievements during this last period, members are fully okay with the fact that the Intellectual Property Rights Act has been enacted, the Technology Innovation Agency Act came into being, and the South African National Space Agency Act has also been established. And as a follow-up, that's why we are working on that board. So moving from the legislative front, and some of the service delivery achievements. During the last year, there was the launch of a South African design electric prototype vehicle for demonstration that happened in September 2008. We note also that the nature of the DSC's investment has shifted, and this is an initiative now where we start to find other role players in government and the private sector taking a far more strategic leadership role. The DSC has done its part, and we're still involved, but only in specific respects, which I think you'll hear more from the DG around. The launch of the hydrogen and fuel cell technology strategy has taken place. The Technology Innovation Agency, TIA, the board is in place, and to operationalize it, there is an interim project management office that has been set up, and a process manager to deal with migration issues around all of the various investments that DSC will be putting into here. In ingestion system for the reception of China's low Earth resource satellite and Argentinian satellite data is in place. On this one, this is a exciting part of it, is that those countries that are developing countries like ours, but far stronger economically and with much more sophisticated science infrastructure, they are allowing us to download satellite imagery from their satellites at no cost. So these are this China, Brazil, as well as Argentina. Co-investment with industry, this is an often asked question. Is it just DSC and the higher education institutions and science councils? We're happy to report that during the previous, PetroSA has invested $10 million for the construction of HISA, which is Hydrogen South Africa Laboratory, for HISA systems integration. I'd like to apologize for that. I felt yesterday that we needed to have a little bit more substantive detail. These issues are actually reflected in the annual report, but we believe that in the discussion with the DG, that we needed to just, you know, catch it actually for maybe a bit more substance to some of the things where we say projects are moving. So we also anticipating a look at some of the questions around are we engaged with the private sector. So HISA is the Hydrogen South Africa Initiative. That's the Hydrogen and Fuel Cell Technology Strategy. And in this context, PetroSA has come on board because of the issues around fuel and so on, and they are co-investing $10 million. Formatec, this is now a bilateral kicking in. The German fuel membrane producer has signed a technology transfer agreement and invested $300,000 into HISA system integration. And then there's a tripartite partnership, very exciting, between DSC, Anglo-Saxon, and Johnson Matthey for fuel cell development. Anglo-Saxon has launched a $100 million development fund to promote commercialization of Saxon Group metal technologies in South Africa. Saxon is a very key metal when you are looking at fuel cell technology. Anglo-Saxon has also invested $5 million US for the design, manufacture, and assembly of fuel cells. And DSC is required to actually match that investment, this co-partnership. So there's very, very strong signals coming that earlier investments DSC has made to take us towards fuel cell technology and so on is paying off with this reflection of interest by not just local private sector partners, but international companies, corporates. Another milestone for us is the launch of the South African Designed Electric Vehicle, the Jewel. I mentioned that earlier. But most specifically, we would like to draw your attention to the biggest area of capability, local South African capability, relates to the battery technology. And this is not something that's new in South Africa. We've got a long history of capability on battery technology. And we say that in this electrical vehicle, almost 50% of the cost relates to the battery. We have registered patents around this battery technology and also generated publications on the subject. And the DSC is now setting up platforms to consolidate and develop South African capabilities in advanced battery technology. We believe going into the future, we have that capability which must be optimized for economic gain. This one is just a reflection. This slide just reflects on a development that has happened during the course of the year in the context of the 10-year innovation plan. Before the 10-year innovation plan, members will be aware, we had a biotech strategy. And with the 10-year innovation plan, we introduced this concept of farmer to farmer, from agricultural products to pharmaceutical projects. And that has led us during the course of the last year to reconfigure our thinking in targeting not just biotechnology, but more the bioeconomy, a bioeconomy concept for South Africa, where we stretch across human health, agriculture, plants and animals, aquatic, industrial, mining, environmental, some of the same thematic thrust that we had in the biotechnology domain, but now to look at it in the context of sustainable development issues when looking for social impact, environmental issues, and economic impact. And I think there will be a presentation made at a later stage on this reconfiguration into a bioeconomy industrial area. Some of the platforms that are coming through is also the redesign of our work on HIV and AIDS, and this is reflected in the program called SHARP, the South African HIV AIDS Research and Innovation Platform. The intention is to provide funding for novel, innovative, and pioneering research in the prevention and treatment of HIV and AIDS. Facilitate and encourage the commercialization of products arising from the research and manage the intellectual property and technology transfer. Some of the more cross-cutting work will be around human capital, networking, and attracting foreign funding partners. That is the HIV and AIDS Innovation Platform. Another platform within the bioeconomy work is the South African Tuberculosis Center of Competence. And here the ambition is to develop a globally compatible portfolio of projects with appropriate partners aligned with the vision of the CDCOC. I think members are aware that we've been spending considerable money on a nanotech-based drug delivery system for tuberculosis. And that is something we can provide at a later stage more information on. We also intend to facilitate the transfer of TB research outputs into commercially viable outcomes of social benefits to South Africa in the focus areas of drugs, vaccines, and diagnostics. Also now not related to the bioeconomy and the health arena is our work on space-based industry. And in this context, we should bring it to your attention that in terms of sophisticated infrastructure for the space industry, we recognize that the HOTEC facility is one that will be very useful to South Africa. This facility in Cabo was established in the mid-1980s to support the Republic of South Africa's Air Force Space Program. The defense program around that was cancelled in the early 90s, and the civilian application component of it, which was called GreenSat, was cancelled in 1995. OTEC has been underutilized in the past 15 years with a resultant degradation of capabilities, and by that we mean the space activities reduced to two microsatellites, SunSat and SumbanjilaSat. Initially, OTEC had been intended under the previous apartheid government regime to serve as a launching facility for satellites. So we believe that we can actually go back to that with constant upgrade. Some facilities remain which could be upgraded and used for future satellite applications. And these are the satellite integration chamber, there's a thermal vacuum chamber, mass property, and I can't pronounce that. 3D measurement and radiometric tests and calibration equipment, as well as a vibration and acoustic noise facility. So we've done a study on the facility, and we've had to engage with the NAL in terms of the transfer of that OTEC facility to the space agency. So these are processes that will be unfolding. And members should, of course, be able to quite close by to visit the OTEC facility. The Department of Science and Technology is now working with the Department of Public Enterprises, Public Works and Communications to engage the NAL for the acquisition and upgrade of OTEC. On the Square Kilometre Array Front, this is an international mega science project. I think you've had a presentation on it. Right now, it includes 55 of the world's top research institutions. So the Square Kilometre Array is not a South African initiative. It is an international initiative. And we're hoping to be the beneficiaries of that initiative. In fact, the host country and the host planet region for much of the Square Kilometre Array. This will involve construction of the world's largest, most sophisticated and technologically advanced astronomical facility. The commissioning is for 2021 to the tune of 1.5 billion euros plus 150 million euros per annum for 50 years operation. So if we land this, this is what we see in terms of engineering investments and so on coming into the country. not that we will get all the engineering work. There will be foreign engineering companies. But we are already preparing ourselves through NEARCAP and so on to position ourselves to win some of those contracts. So that gives us 8 African countries with short and slip roads, which is 3 kilometers away, along with Australasia. So when we look at some of the successes that have happened around this, we've attracted further international projects, and this is in the context of, let's say, addressing risks around our bids, risks that arise because in some quarters there's Afro-pessimism, building concerns about building in Africa, and we've addressed this through some initiatives, the CBAC initiative and paper. I'd ask you to discuss those questions around that with the DG or that program if you have a special presentation around it. I'm not all that of an expert on that. International Collaboration in High-Tech Development, CASPA, this is around some of the engineering work that relates to Karoo Array Telescope that can lend itself to the 3-kilometer array. And then the development of local expertise through industry engagement. And what you see there is a picture of the world's first classic radio astronomy dish developed by a South African contractor.
Why so is that? Why
is that common? It's just to give a sense that that plastic is of a composite material, but it's something as ordinary as plastic. And then, of course, when you over time, the material is going to have to become much more, let's say, aligned with the SKA requirements. But structurally, we've proved that we can actually manufacture this to the parameters that have been set so far in the design. What we describe NEARCAP as a pathfinder. And this is why even that demo model, that first plastic one that was designed, is a demonstration, a pathfinder to show exactly what could happen. And NEARCAP, of course, is we utilize Carnarvon. We have built up an on-site facility. And NEARCAP, I can't remember the exact number of dishes. I think it's about 75 or so dishes will be built up, constructed in the Carnarvon site to serve as a premier astronomy facility, 80 we know when we're doing that 3-kilometer array. Now, there have actually been some socio-economic benefits to date. The NEARCAP construction work has generated 592 local jobs, and this is primarily for the previously disadvantaged members of the community. The total local contribution from South Africa side has been 11.4 million. That's just on the construction. Local businesses and the hospitality industry experienced a 30 to 50% increase in turnover during 2008-09. That is your visitors, both from the European and United States agencies engaged in this process. Outreach and education, these are what we describe as the collateral benefits. From the building of huge science infrastructure, communities should also have benefits, and this is the collateral benefits we speak of. A cyber lab has been established at Carnarvon High School. Math and science teacher training has commenced. So if we have a base of scientists and engineers working in Carnarvon, they should be devoting some time for extra teaching and so on. And then there have been private sector partnerships established for some of the software. There will be a huge load of electronics that will actually be required in that. If I then shift to some of the highlights that we've seen from Program 3, International Cooperation and Resources, their work is divided into sub-programs on multilaterals in Africa, and international resources, mobilizing funding from abroad, and bilateral cooperation. Those are the three chief sub-programs in Program 3. Their objective is to develop and monitor bilateral and multilateral relationships and agreements in science and technology. Strengthen the national system of innovation and enable the flow of knowledge, capacity, and resources into South Africa and neighboring countries. Some of the highlights, through overseas bilateral cooperation, one-to-one, one country to another country, over 100 R&D projects in areas such as energy, space, ICT and biotechnology was implemented. This is where I say there is an interface between ICR International and the other sub-programs. So in other words, Program 2 on biotechnology and energy leverages off international partnerships. International bilateral agreements serve as a basis for implementing the cooperation in the India-Brazil-South Africa framework and other flagship projects. They achieved 125 new joint projects in Africa 4, Asia and America 35, and Europe and the Gulf 82. The discrepancy you see there with the numbers in Africa compared to the other regions of the world is that generally the other regions of the world have much more funding available to mobilize joint projects. A total of 115 new bilateral projects therefore were established in 2008-9. We noted earlier on that there were 338 million in international resources that were mobilized. Of this, within this context, we have secured 13 million to address poverty, underdevelopment, and marginalization in science and technology interventions. The bulk of it related to a huge chunk of European Commission funding to the department with a focus on poverty. We also then received 3 million, euros from Finland through the COFISA program. This is a cooperation framework on innovation systems between Finland and South Africa. And it's not just restricted for cooperation in South Africa, but for science and technology in Africa in a broader context. And we've of course continued the financial support of NEFTAB flagship initiatives on science and technology. If I move into the fourth program, this is the one, Program 4, which we just call Human Capital and Knowledge Systems. There is a division of responsibilities at the sub-program level between human capital and science platforms, indigenous knowledge systems, and then emerging research areas and infrastructure. The overall objective is the development and implementation of national programs to produce knowledge, human capital, and associated infrastructure, equipment, and public research services to sustain the national system of innovation. Some of the highlights, the 10 new research chairs are indicated, in addition to the 72 that have already been established. A postdoctoral program supported 70 fellows, these are research fellows, of which 40 were new enrollments. 271 honors, I've mentioned this earlier. We can now say that 85% of them were black students and 55% of them were female. So we are actually also monitoring, you know, at a lower level, what is the demographic and what is the focus in terms of support. 2,550 learners participated also in the DSC adopted Denaleri Schools program. So we have a relationship there also with the Department of Education. Related also to science and youth, 651 mathematics and science teachers were equipped with the necessary competencies to deliver the science, engineering and technology curriculum. 92 unemployed science graduates were placed in the internship program and 124 of them entered the National Youth Service program. 195,000 people participated in the 67 countrywide during National Science Week, of whom 89% were learners. Science Week does target math and science learners in the schooling environment. The South African Strategic Research Infrastructure Forum, and we're moving to one of the other sub-programs in that program, was successfully launched. This now makes sure that we, in attempt to optimize the way we place infrastructure in university science councils and so on, we actually have established at a very high level a forum that includes participation by your NRF, your science councils and so on. We've also seen the successful establishment of the Nanotechnology Health, Safety and Environmental Research Platform and the Nanoscience Center, and I would urge members to visit that center in Pretoria. A Bachelor of Indigenous Knowledge Systems qualification has been registered with SAQWA. We are very proud of this. On the infrastructure side, standard connectivity rollout. We've seen that there seems to be a 60%, that's our understanding, roughly a 60% progress achievement with this rollout. And what it sees is many of these institutions shown on this landscape will enjoy 10 gigabits per second connectivity with SANRAL. And these institutions go from universities like UP, University of Pretoria, TUT, Tshwane University of Technology, CSR, UNITA, HSRC, NRS, Council for Geosciences, Agricultural Research Council, both based in Pretoria, linked up with this, the University of Johannesburg, and MINSEC around the Joburg area, Polokwane, your University of Limpopo, as well as the Tshwane University of Technology campus in Limpopo, in Durban, Port Elizabeth, and in Cape Town. This is the standard South African National Research Network. We also see that in partnership with IBM, looking at the Center for High Performance Computing, looking at the speed with which information can be processed, there's been a partnership with IBM on hosting the Blue Gene for Africa initiative. So this is not just about South Africa, but it's about providing computing capability to the whole of Africa, and IBM chose to set up this computer facility in South Africa. What it does is it gives you this computing capability around issues on climate change, HIV and AIDS, all the modeling work that you use the data with, food security and with computing. That was launched in October 2008, and members are welcome to visit the CHPC facility. We move then to Program 5, Social Economic Partnership, and here we have three sub-programs, one on economic impact, one on social impact, and one on science and technology investment. The objective is to provide policy, strategy, and direction-setting support for R&D-led growth of value-adding industries, to enable government, industry, and the general public to understand and deal with the challenges of global change, for evidence-based research on the human and social dynamics of development, and to enhance government decision-making on science and technology, including R&D, as productive investments. I must apologize for some of the dramatic, the spelling errors here. Sometimes you keep changing your presentation and talk to them, crop back in and you can't understand why, but it's with all the cutting and pasting. Some of the achievements of the program, through the CSR from the ICT R&D strategy, there's been a geomatic platform that has been making a very real impact in provincial administration related to outbreaks of fire. And so there's a system that is called ACES, the Advanced Fire Information Service Platform. This has already been used at a provincial level and is making a very real impact in terms of early detection. Not early warning, you don't know beforehand, but it's very early detection using sensors and so on that there is a fire that has started somewhere. Because we know we've seen massive forests, areas of forests being destroyed in Mpumalanga and KZN in previous years. We initiated a larger scale demonstration of a wireless mesh network as part of our investigations on broadband connectivity. So here we can begin to look at, can we connect up rural areas at a much lower cost? Then there's the joint DST Dwarf Department of Water Affairs project on innovative alternative technologies for water supply and access. This has been established to use novel technologies to ensure that clean and safe drinking water is available in remote and rural settings. There's a memorandum of understanding on joint science and technology projects concluded with six national departments. This is to ensure that you actually have hard buy-in from the DG level downwards to some of the joint areas of work. There's also been the development, successful development of an automated system for collecting data on public expenditure on science and technology activities. some very good news is that this automated system resides within the National Treasury information system. And what happens effectively is all government departments report on what they are, what their expenditure is on science and technology activity. It took us about 2 years to sit down with other government departments to ensure that we had their buy-in and they also understood the classification system about what is a science and technology activity and how they would then report into it. The benefit of this is that we're not only analyzing DST's expenditure on science and technology. What we are analyzing is the science and technology expenditure by Department of Defense, Department of Minerals and Energy, Department of Trade and Industry Health, a wide spectrum of government departments. This is a report that is about to be tabled to Cabinet, and I suspect then we will be coming to Parliament to present that report. A report on publicly financed scientific and technological activities has been compiled for submission to Cabinet. Aside from some of the policy support work that the DST does in Program 5, there's also the R&D-led growth for local industries. And one of the major initiatives that is being supported under Light Metal is the development of a titanium industry. This work is being led by an interdepartmental committee comprising the DST, in fact chaired by the DST, includes the DCI, includes minerals and minerals resources, I got to get used to these new names, as well as the Department of Public Enterprise. And as you can see here, South Africa possesses the second largest reserve of unbeneficiated titanium dioxide in the world. But much of it we ship out unbeneficiated. If you look from the lowest level, yeah, we have the ilmenite. This is the ore that is being shipped out of South Africa, unbeneficiated. If you just move up to one step of processing, you move from 0.29 US cents a kg to 0.79 US cents a kg. If you move from the ilmenite, which is found in a raw state in South Africa, to the titanium dioxide slag. This is the difference. If you go all the way to milled products, this is now whether it's your rolls or your bars or your sheeting, you actually ship up to 50 US dollars a kg of titanium. What we are targeting is that we would like to produce titanium powder on the one hand. We believe we have the most cost-effective method that has been developed in the world, and this is already under patent. We also intend not just producing the titanium powder for sale to export markets in aerospace and so on, but we also believe that local engineering companies must utilize it to manufacture components and parts and so on. So that is the ambition. We also believe that if we get here to this stage of titanium chloride, we will impact on an area that the DSDTI is interested in. That's titanium dioxide for the pigment industry. So we have a full value chain concept around this. And in that respect, we've actually set up a titanium center of competence, harnessing capabilities across South Africa. If you see, we have actually divided it into capability areas. Production of titanium, primary metal, powder metallurgy, investment casting, machining of titanium, joining of titanium, and later stages forming of titanium. In each of these, there are specific institutions that have taken the lead. They are champions in those capability areas, but they are working with other institutions, universities, and even industry. We also find that there are different cross-cutting capabilities that must feed into all of these. So you see physical metallurgy of titanium, the key universities that give us this competency, University of Pretoria, University of Cape Town, University of KwaZulu-Natal. In simulation and modeling, University of Limpopo has very strong capabilities. Now the Titanium Center of Competence is one of the competencies we will be driving with TIA as part of implementing the 10-year innovation plan. And at later stages, along very similar lines, you will have presentations by DSC on other centers of competence that have been and are in the process of being established. We also have in our annual report indicated that we've commenced work with a technology localization strategy. And this builds off a government initiative to leverage from the huge infrastructure build program running across Eskom, Transnet, and so on. The DSC has defined the role it has to play. It can't give instructions to Eskom and Transnet. That's the role for public enterprise. But it can, in partnership with DTI, support the small local companies that are supposed to be getting contracts out of this. And in line with the methodology that we've agreed on within government and with the state-owned enterprises, we finalized a customized technology benchmarking tool with UNIDA. There was an earlier one that was done, but that was generally around the business readiness of the local company. The DSC went one step further and refined the benchmarking tool to look at technology benchmarking. 100 companies in the foundry industry have already been benchmarked, and this is way over our original target. The industry overview studies in the foundry and nuclear sector that is nearing completion. A new hub has been put on the program, and that one was actually identified by Eskom, and that's for transformers and motors. 10 companies have been identified for benchmarking and technology assistance packages, and the technology assistance packages fall under our localization strategy. And these are now not related to Eskom and to Transnet, but it comes even in what members are familiar with the digital migration work, where the set-top boxes with digital, the decoders, will be manufactured in South Africa. The DSC will be looking at the technology support that has to go to downstream industry. There's been a local OEM that's been identified for manufacturing haulage trucks related to Transnet. And then with the national, the nuclear ambitions that South Africa has, at this stage it's still ambitious. Government hasn't taken a move yet on the nuclear plant. But in the meantime, the DSC has been working on our readiness for our local industry to participate. And we've supported work around accrediting a manufacturing center with an ADME 3 certificate. This internationally is what is required, and if you don't have it, engineering companies will not be able to engage in nuclear manufacturing. We also, in the context of local manufacturing, are supporting a DCI-led industry development on fluorochemicals. That is the phase, the Fluorochemicals Expansion Initiative. The DCI has been the lead department, but the DSC is a strong partner. There is actually on the technology development side an interdepartmental committee chaired by DSC, but where Minerals Resources and DCI participate. And putting the building blocks together, we set up two fluorochemicals research chairs, one in KwaZulu-Natal and one at University of Pretoria. We've also upgraded the facilities at Nectar and Talchem. This industry is a very dirty industry. And it's not only just very dirty, it's also very hazardous, dangerous, working with those materials. And this is why you actually look for a local research institution that has a reputation, a built-up reputation, in handling fluorine chemistry. And that resides at Nectar. This just gives you a spectrum of the institutions as well as their fields of expertise. Now, I would like at this point to hand over to my colleague, Maliko Wane, who's going to just talk us through these slides. I will start with this first one, which is to, it's not blowing our trumpets, but what it is actually saying is we would like to give members a reassurance that if you look at our track record, 2006, 2007, 7, 8, 8, 9, from the funding that we have been given through the system, we have generally spent almost all of it. At this point in time, we just lost, this man has lost an engineer. Maliko Wane will talk to that one. As you can see in the green, the actual expenditure against the blue, which is the amount that was voted to us. And we're happy to see that this was growing, not too certain, for the next 2 years, 10, 11, 11, 12. Whether we get a cut or whether it stays where it is.
Before that, I just want to check, honourable members and the department, whether should we continue and people ask clarity at the end or you're almost at the end. Oh, okay.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, honourable members. As we can see, the slide that we are at right now tells us about the financial performance for the last financial year. We were appropriated a budget of 3.721 billion, and out of that budget, we expended 99.5%, and there was unused funding of 0.5%, and the auditor's report is quite what you call impressive. It's an unqualified report. On the slide again, we're just showing the slice of the budget per each program within the DFT. If I start here, I see we have our socio-economic partners with a budget of 1.1 billion, and that represents 6% of the entire budget. Then we have our corporate services and governance. It's 123.840. That is 3%. And we have research, development, and innovation. 864 million, which is 23%, and we have international cooperation and resources with 140.5 million. That represents 4% of the budget. And finally, the human capital and knowledge system is 1.45 billion. That represents 40%. Okay, and here again we do show the expenditure per program for the particular year. And what I could just say here is all of them performed quite well around the 90s.
I did indicate earlier on that one of the objectives in the department is also in one of the programs around contributing to enhanced decision making around R&D investments across government and even within the private sector. And one of the ways we do that is to constantly monitor what is the level of R&D expenditure. And we undertake what we call the R&D survey report. It's on the basis of this tracking of this R&D expenditure and demonstrating to the government of the day that there is value to be derived from investments in R&D, the economic argument, that the objective of the target of 1% GDP was set in cabinet. And here we just give you a sense very quickly that we will actually be accelerating our arguments around going beyond that 1% target, which we have set, to looking at more or less what is in line with the OECD average. The OECD average in 2005 was 2.3%. And our long-term target as a department at this stage, because we don't have cabinet endorsement, but just as a department, is that we must work very hard to build a case to move on the expenditure across government, across the nation, the national expenditure, to 2% of GDP. We look at the systems in terms of demographic representation of total employment. There's still a need for looking at making sure that our scientific workforce is truly representative of the demographic. Now, in conclusion, overall, we believe that the department has achieved and met most of its performance targets. The human capital development is a priority. Innovation instruments have been put in place, the establishment of SEER and centers of competence, the establishment of the Space Agency, the IPR Act, those are enablers, the SEER Act and the Space Agency Act. There's been strong financial performance by the department, as well as good performance by entities reporting to the DSC. Now, I can conclude there, but I need the guidance, chairperson and members, in terms of presenting on some of the highlights from our Science Council. I know that they will be presenting to you, so you will be seeing their overall performance, and it may not be necessary for DSC to actually talk to the institution.
They will be coming next week, and I would think that it will be, we can wait until that time. Can we take just 5 minutes stretch? 5 minutes before we come to questions. There are two things that before we allow questions, my apologies on that, is that one, we didn't attend the apology of the chair who was in Copenhagen in the last 2 days, and he has fallen sick. The secretary has to prepare to go home. The second thing is that I do see that we have got visitors. I think when they want to speak on the matter, if they do, they will have to introduce themselves. So I think that's what there are two gentlemen that are just behind you. My apologies. I would have thought that they would introduce themselves. We got lost together. I met them in V227, and I had to drag them here. So unfortunately now they are out. But when they come in, when we are for time for questions, they will then introduce themselves. And then we welcome the former chair of Science and Technology. As you are coming in, I was then saying we didn't accord you an opportunity to introduce yourself. We will do that. I don't know whether you are going to be asking some questions in this report. But okay, before questions, can you introduce yourself?
My name is Dr. Rob Brennan. I'm from the Executive Director at the National Renaissance Foundation. Thank you, Chair.
My name is Dr. Zebron Blagazi, Director of the Kemba Lab.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. The secretary will just want to. What we will do now, because I don't want us to go backwards and forwards, what we will do before we go back to the issue of the list, as you agree that we had a challenge of a quorum, which I think now is fine.
To the what? The meeting.
Can we, people that have got an experience on these matters,
just find that.
I can't believe you. You know, when she did say that by 11:30, she will have to go and see the doctor. She did say that she has got an 11:30 appointment. All right. Here we are. The report has been presented, honorable members. I think there are areas of
of comfort and excitement that the science and technology is the only department that got an unqualified report. But we stand to check off some of the things which we'd also like to improve. I'm sure when we do our oversight, we'll look into that. But I think it's of comfort that you have that. The second thing, I do think that as you'll be speaking, members, I just want to throw that in, that it will be important that we really, I didn't know that Khabro here next door, it's just a tiny town, as you're coming from the Eastern Cape, has got such a huge institution that I do agree with you when you said that we must give ourselves time to go and look into that and see how best can we re-utilize that. I think as members of parliament in our oversight, we will then have to look into. We can't have skeleton in my view, as much as I'm not a scientist, we can't have skeleton buildings on science and technology that are not being utilized. Having said that, can we, now we have got the quorum, would you like to dispense with number one, or should we continue with the questions here and then
we
must dispense with one? Okay, all right. You leave.
Honorable Chief. I'm just wanting to check the legalities of the voting process now. We've now called in two people. We found that there are not alternative members of the committee. Is this legal? Can we just call
anybody? They're being co-opted in the place of whoever is in here. So,
the only time they have been part of the process of
the voting. That's why the thing says always at the end of the notice, your work, you must consult with your work regarding voting. So, the work for the ANC has co-opted two members.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. All right. It's like the full members, that's not here.
Can we then go back to number one? Over to you. The Honourable Smith from the IFP moved for the adoption and acceptance. The African National Congress, the Honourable Mkhize seconded. And they noted, we have noted the issues raised by the DA from Honourable Shin. The report is in front of us. I think we do make a quorum.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Yeah. Honourable Jacobus and Honourable Oliphant.
Chair, there's been a mover and a second, and there's been no objections. I think the DA is concerned has been noted in the minutes of this meeting, and it shall remain noted as such. So I think that there are no serious and violent objections to any other thing that's been
reported.
Mine was just a point of enrichment that any member of the of this parliament can participate in any committee and so on. So there is no illegality. And lastly, that in a case like this, as explained in terms of co-option of members, so there is no underhandedness. Thank you very much. The rules are very clear on that.
Now I will. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Now I think that we are then the names will then be taken inside the minute. Then the due processes will then follow. All right. Thank you very much, Members. We. All right. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Can we then go into the, there's a report that has been tabled. Any comments? I would suggest a process, and you'll pardon me, you'll call me in order if it's not within that. As you will be asking clarities, you'll have to, I don't know whether you want to go page by page, or you'll take everything, but also ensure that you'll then come with some recommendations and then proposals to the department. I've seen that there are two hands, Honourable Jacobus, Honourable Shin, Honourable Smith, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to also start and add my voice to to those who have actually commended the department for a clean audit report from the Water Department. I think it's really, really to find those and ask the department to continue with that. I just have two very brief questions, Chairperson. I know the bursaries and stuff that has been given to honours and master's students and so on. The current minister, as well as the former minister of science and technology, are both very passionate about the involvement, especially of younger learners in science and technology. And I also see that there's been a lot of participation in Science Week and all of those other activities that I had. But to what extent, and maybe it's a question for not just science and technology, but also for education, mm-hmm. and it might be a bit unfair on you, but I think I'd like to hear the response as well. To what extent do you carry through in terms of pushing those learners up to higher education level? Because if you look at the number of graduates and so on, they're a bit thin on the ground. And if we're going to encourage and harness that talent, because there's a lot of good projects and programs that comes out of that. I've seen some of them, of young people with very innovative ideas on certain things. So to what extent do we really ensure that we drag them along, right up to honors and masters and whatever, and can actually churn out scientists and so on? My second question is on page 16, or slide 16, where we look at the achievements. And I see there's cooperation between ourselves and four other African countries. So I'd just like the interested to know who they are. Because one of the points that were raised right at the beginning was for us always to be knowledgeable on or cognizant that as government and indeed as a country, we want to harness as much on the African continent when it comes to good practice and so on, and examples that we can use, and not only look beyond our shores, beyond the continent, but also to look on our continent, because I'm sure there's much to be gained in terms of what we have as a continent. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Also, of course, congratulations for the keen audit. Just to say that is interesting, though, although we all think a keen audit is a necessary thing, which it is, it's not by itself crucial delivery. So one can have a keen audit and not be delivering. But in this case, I'm sure you're delivering as well. So just an aside issue before I ask the question. When I was coming in on the car, I heard some announcement, and I wasn't quite sure, I wasn't with the DTI or DST, but there's an Innovations Award being hosted by a department, and I thought I heard Department of Trade and Industry. Is that correct? Because I would have thought an Innovations Award would have been your department, DST, rather than DTI. Now, I know there's overlap. And but that's a classic example, I would have thought, of a DST lead. Anyway, maybe I've got it wrong, but if you know the answer, I'd like to know. Yeah, Chen, on the report, well, maybe just to start that, I do find, this discussion we had earlier about the targets versus the achievements confusion. I think it's actually still confusing, and I'm not quite sure what the report is actually saying. It's not terribly clear about what the target is and what the achievement is, even in the actual report itself. So it's a little bit unclear there. Then to say that one thing I think I would have appreciated would be some sort of measure of the outputs, which targets were achieved. In other words, for all the indicators and the projected outputs and outcomes, of those that you set yourself as a target for the year, how many were achieved, how many were not achieved, just so that one gets a sense that you set yourself goals which you did achieve or you didn't. Now, the ones that you gave us are examples. They're just some of the indicators. But I've got no idea, unless I study something else, precisely how you perform according to the targets you set yourself. I don't have an overview of that. Then, a general question that actually worries me. Well, it doesn't worry me, it's just one I'm a little bit concerned about, and that is the whole spread of sort of applied research versus basic research and how we utilize state resources in favor of one versus the other. There was a study some years ago that was classifying South Africa as a dynamic adopter as opposed to a sort of a innovator. And the dynamic adopter is a country that really, as I understood it, doesn't really have the resources to lead the way internationally in respect of general research, but it has the ability to adopt what is being done out there and turn it to their advantage. Whereas countries, say, like the States, have this huge critical mass of basic research, which 20 years down the road gets turned into product. Now, I heard you know, the statement being made that, of course, if you look at our program, we have the program 5, which is a short-term horizon, 2-3, maybe 5 years, that's great. And then we have the program 2, which has got a longer-term horizon. I'm very happy that we adopt both. I don't think it's a question of either-or, but I would be interested to know, from a budget perspective, what basic percentage of funding would go towards the long-term basic research exercise versus the applied science stuff. And I'm not sure the answer is simply with the pie chart at the end, 30% here, 40% there. I'm not quite sure that it's directly that. It might be something else. Then, Chair, the slide 20, I'm just interested here, slide 20, you speak about funding, the maths and science teachers equipped with the necessary competencies to deliver SET curriculum. I wonder if you could just explain what that is to me. I mean, what is an SET curriculum? I presume this is a school curriculum, but I'm not quite sure what a school curriculum is. And how they're equipped. I mean, obviously, basic education has a function here. Is this a sort of a project that you're working with basic education and it's funded by this department or funded by the other department or what? I'm just not quite sure. And also, I was hoping you could expand a little on slide 26, which talks about the memorandum of understanding on the joint S&T project completed with national departments. I really would like to know more about that. I mean, for example, if you take energy, Department of Energy, what's the story with the pebble bed now and Eskom and so on? I see the other day, for example, that Eskom is no longer in a position to build the pilot solar power station that it had extensively made provision for because of the funding crisis. Now, does this department have any role in that, for example, in that whole exercise? And if Eskom's unable to go ahead, does it simply collapse, goes nowhere, or do you have a role to play in resuscitating such a, I would think, vital project? And then, Chair, I don't want to be too long here. On the titanium project, which I think is fantastic, I just want to know, because your starting point was, in fact, the beneficiators, but not the extractors. If you take RBM, who I think are the biggest producers, I mean, they have to play ball as well, because if RBM simply export the stuff straight to Australia, then you're going to miss the whole beneficiation chain. So do the producers, at the primary level, are they part of this strategy? Thing which I don't think it could work. And because it's such a valuable exercise, is this whole beneficiation chain story being extended to other areas? I see, it's implied in the platinum side with fuel cell and catalytic converters and so on. But I mean, have you identified other fields where the whole approach could be of great use to us as a country? And then just the last one, Chair, you know this whole migration of the analog to digital, this little toy to be put on top of the machine. I mean, even last year or the year before, DFC was saying that we're going to produce this thing, et cetera, et cetera. It's still here like we're going to do it. But, I mean, this whole thing kicks off next year in March. I mean, digital broadcasting is March 2010. We're sitting in November. So 4 months' time we're doing it. I've never seen one of these products for sale. And I thought every TV set in the country that's analog has to have one of these on it to watch the World Cup. So is this something that's going to happen after the World Cup? And nobody's going to watch it, or you're going to get it done beforehand? I'm just confused what's happening there. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll just focus on two areas. One is the research chair. I think we're way behind from what I understand the initial projections were for research chair. I have to find the right number that I thought that we should be at. And then, because in your summary of the program, you say that only 10 years research chairs were awarded, financial constraints coupled with the inability of institutions to attract appropriate candidates. Can you please expand on that? Why we have inappropriate candidates? Are we stretching our net far and wide? Are we encouraging suitable intellectuals from the rest of Africa, from the rest of the world? What are the inhibitors? What are the inhibiting factors that we need to get shot off in order to bring these people into our net of teaching professionals, as it were? The other one I want to perhaps focus on, there's lots of bits that I'd like to focus on each one, was the national equipment rollout. We're talking of an 80% increase in acquisition and placement in research equipment institutions by 2018. And the aim was to spend 60% of that 80%, I presume, because the percentage is not longer set. In 2008-2009, have we spent that 60% on upgrading equipment? If we can just have some clarity on it, I'm quite sure all our scientific institutions are different from your choice of that. Those two for the final thing.
Thank you. I think those are the last number. You may respond.
Thanks, Chair. In terms of the question around the bursaries and pulling, on one hand, having the bursaries to support high level capacity at the lower end, the intervention, we have a portfolio of work which is comes under a banner called Science and Youth, or Youth into Science. And I think what we can do is we can arrange for a presentation of that entire portfolio. We did struggle a bit with the Department of Education. I think it was not last year, but the year before. But during the course of last year, we actually were able to get a very firm cooperation with them that they accepted. We weren't trying to do their work. We weren't trying to invade their teaching environment, but it was complementary to the work they were doing. So the Science and Youth Initiative are now beginning to work really well. And I would recommend that our program 4 presents to the committee on that. With the four African countries that we have achieved cooperation with, I can only see in the actual annual report a statement that indicates by our program 3 that with Algeria they have struck 3 new ones, and with Lesotho a new one has come on board. So those are the 4. That doesn't mean that that's the only work we're doing in Africa, but in terms of substantive initiatives that has come up. On the indicators work in terms of our delivery, I very fully accept the criticism around the way we structured reporting on target and actual performance. In fact, we spent a substantial portion of our reporting time in DSC during that period, working with the Auditor General's Office, National Treasury, and a company like Deloitte and Touche, KPMG, to look at the way we report. Would we in the future receive a qualified audit in terms of performance reporting? Are we reporting against targets? Is it in a meaningful way? And we believe that we are now on track, given the work we've done, to actually make sure that in our next annual report we are much more aligned in terms of those indicators. But your point particularly around the country numbers, do they make sense? And can you actually then comparatively say you're way behind target or you're on target? Now, your reference to the Thai methodology, the Technology Achievement Index methodology, if you recall the assessment across the country's technology performance relates to 4 areas specifically. And the one is on human capital. And so they look at the numbers of university graduates and literacy and education, and what the average number of years of education. But then they start going into the technology arena, and they look at, number one, the ability of the country to roll out, to actually use existing technologies, mature technologies, like have your people got electricity? Have they got connectivity in telephones? And then it climbs up a ramp, because to just roll out electricity is a mature technology, off-the-shelf capacities and so on. But then have you, how well has your country moved from fixed lines to mobile lines? And now you're looking at, also in the third rung, medium-term exports. And on the highest rung, high-tech exports. Now, South Africa was profiled, and we actually do have high-tech exports. And it's on that basis that we were then positioned on the cusp of what they called mature and able to absorb technology, to actually introducing innovation. And this is why they define it as dynamic adopters. So it doesn't exclude a measure on the high-tech export.
Yeah. Yeah. No, my great point is, my question is, I mean, how do we split our expenditure on the two sides?
Yes. We haven't actually got an explicit figure against that. But what we have profiled within the DSC is that area of work where our total focus is on human capital development, the work we fund through the NRF, that is primarily around your basic research. It doesn't exclude applied research. We don't draw the line. But it does primarily invest in basic research. When we move into your applied areas of biotechnology, which harnesses new knowledge from different science fields to convert it into technology platforms, your nanotech and so on, then we are saying we shift into the applied. So in effect, your programs 2 funding and your program 5 funding is primarily around the applied research. So we don't have a one-to-one matching. We actually, as a country, cannot invest too much on basic. We are much too in need of application. And so you'll find a bias in the investment profile on the applied side rather than the basic side. But we do recognize that in terms of investing in basic research, it's not just about the technology, but it's about building human capital. And then the teachers for science, engineering, and technology, the interventions we've undertaken there. We have done that actually through the NRF, and if I understand correctly, it's about ensuring that in terms of resources, in terms of labs, laboratories, and so on, they need to be better equipped to operate in this environment. And there's also the whole concept of the science census. And we've looked at a sort of a clustering around certain regions in the country, whether we could support the placement of scientific labs and so on, so schools and teachers from a range of areas actually get access to that. But I will not be able to unpack that fully. And I think that could be the subject of the other issue that was raised around the relationship with the learning and how we actually drag them through the pipeline. The MOA with other government departments, to just unpack that a little, there was a question that was put to us. Why do you need an MOA with another government department? It's your responsibility as government, one government department to work with, another government department. But we found that by having some kind of instrument of agreement, it gets to the detail of how much resources are actually going to be committed. It also assigns responsibility within the respective departments to ensure delivery. I should note that we are in the stages of finalizing an MOA with the Department of Mineral Resources. That had started with the old DME. But PDMR does not reside with energy. sorry, not
Yes.
It was public enterprise. And so I know there are discussions happening around that. And Eskom, on the solar plant, I think from the outset, Eskom had anticipated having an independent power producer going into partnership on that one. And I think with the global dip, not just dip, but the recession, they've been really finding it really difficult to get investment partners on that one. The DG will, of course, be able to talk a lot more around those issues of the energy PPM upgrade and all the plants that get them concentrated for the power plant. Yes, on the question around the model, the center of competence model on titanium, we are, that is replicated in other areas of work. Even when you look at what we're doing on HISA and on the battery technology, we intend structuring that into your center of competence model. There's a number of other areas that are in the sensitive stages. We're putting all the blocks together because it builds on investments we've made in the past and where we've actually got a few patents lined up and so on. So those, as I indicated earlier, will probably be coming to Parliament to present on the suite of centres of competence that CIA will be driving for us. And the question on the migration from analog to digital, there's actually an interdepartmental task team working around this. We've progressed in terms of the standards for the decoders that have been established, and it's on that basis that local manufacturers now have to begin looking at whether they could meet those specs. And government introduced, given the subsidy requirements, government introduced certain performance requirements around, let's say, using it as an enabling platform for access to information in rural areas and so on and so forth. And there has actually been an exercise for the companies who are potential local manufacturers to prepare prototypes to assure us that they can actually do it. So we are way down the line, and I think the awards of the contracts are probably going to happen in a few months.
Well, we're not going to run out of time. Sorry to interrupt.
March
is the deadline.
I know that was
November now.
But remember, our switch off was the switch from analog to digital was intended to happen in 2011. I believe there was a recommendation to cabinet that we actually extended. You must bear in mind that 2015 is the global cutoff date for migration from analog to digital. So we have no choice. We are going to have to migrate. We were being kept overly ambitious in setting ourselves the 2011 full migration. But I think we could get more input in terms of that extension of time from our Department of Clarification of that from the Department of Information. The number of research chairs, yes, we had intended, because our ambition to have 210 by the year 2010. And we note that 2010 in 31st of March 2011. but in terms of, you recognize that with the economic slowdown, we got less, we received less funding from the Treasury for the research chair. And in terms of the inhibiting factors, because of the additionality required that this wouldn't encroach on the teaching requirements, teaching time loads within the university environment, universities were allowed to search even abroad, whether it was for an academic related to the teaching program or for a research professor who would lead the research program at the university. And if you're looking abroad, the lead researchers don't come cheap. And so this has been one of the inhibiting factors, as well as the fact that we're not just generally seeking research chairs in any field. It's also related to our needs. our priority areas. The national equipment rollout, I don't know, DJ, if you heard that last question. We had ambition of having a full replacement and upgrade by 2018. But for 2008-09, we have committed to an 80%, let's say, utilization of available funds for these upgrades and so on. That is our national equipment program. I think with implementation by the NRS, we did achieve that 80% thing on the 60%, isn't it? Which page?
Page 67.
Yeah, I don't think I'm staying close to that.
I can't give you medicine,
ma'am. Yes?
Thank you. I can't
but
give
you medicine.
Yeah,
yeah.
I can't speak to the exact figure because I haven't seen it, but I know the equipment program, which is operated by the NRS, is fully expensed. Every cent of money that we get is spent, and it's always oversubscribed by at least 40%. So the amount of equipment that is needed out there, especially at the national facilities, the specialized research areas that the NRS looks after, but also across the board at universities and science councils, is massive.
I could just provide some clarification on that. We have experience. Our ambition is to have by 2018.
Sorry, did you see? Okay, can you?
Okay. It is our ambition to have an 80% increase in the quantum of money available for replacement and upgrade. And then, whilst this program was rolling out, we appreciated fully that there was an imbalance in terms of infrastructure in our historically disadvantaged universities as opposed to the more advanced. And we hoped with the 2008-09 funding to have addressed 60% of that imbalance. In other words, there wasn't enough money, we believe, to wipe out the imbalance. And there's other issues besides money that you have to address before you can address those. And we note here in the report that the NRS was engaged in redress issues, and to further that, we've agreed to conduct an impact assessment study to make sure that we are actually, the funding is deployed for redressing those imbalances. So we hope we come back during the course of the year with some feedback on that. The equipment database has been put in place. Then that will help us check.
Yes.
Thanks, Chair. I'm not sure what the question is, but if I look at the annual report, that entry has two targets. The one is at 80% by 2018, and the other one is 60% to address the imbalances on the actual indicator or measure. So I'm not sure because that's been met.
Mm.
So, but I wasn't sure what the question is.
But I think what we're saying is in the last column that to ensure that we can even demonstrate that we're addressing this imbalance, we set up the database and the impact study that can happen.
All right. Thank you very much. But I think I'm not quite sure whether you didn't want to add on the issue of the PBMR, the solar thing, before Honourable Richard asked the question, or would I must allow the DDG to just feed you in on that. Mm-hmm. Honourable Richard?
No, thanks, Chair. A few questions. Let me raise something which I think we as members were happy that Defense and Technology has received a clean audit, but I'm not happy because other departments didn't receive a clean audit. To me, that is a serious concern. But my question, I'm not saying we must not celebrate Defense and Technology and things like that, but we must look at the bigger picture. What is happening to other departments? are you intending to share your secret with other people? Because that's a serious matter for our government. The second question, I think it's page 20, or slide 20, where you talk of 92 unemployed science graduates, and at the same time you talk of where you place them under internship, and 124 enter the National Youth Service Program. I need the clarity on that. In terms of 124, 92 is included, or 92 are still in the process of the internship, or 124 is a separate number. This 92 and 124. The other thing, I don't know, in terms of the slide, unfortunately we don't have that slide in the presentation, where the slide that talks to titanium value chain analysis. You talk of the departmental ambition. I didn't get the progress so far, because I think this is an annual report. So there is the progress so far in terms of the departmental ambition. Maybe if you can assist me. The other question, I think it's like 25, where you talk of advanced fire information services. Is this service available to other municipalities or to municipalities in order for them to use and utilize the services to identify fire and things like that? And if it's available, is it compulsory for all municipalities to use these services, or metros will be able, because of the budget and things like that, they will be able to use these services, or is optional, certain municipalities they can use and utilize these services or not, or it's compulsory because the services have been identified and developed for other government to use it. And also, in the same slide, you talk of innovative alternative technologies. But in this case, you were referring to the dwarf. But my question, as the science and technology, you develop these alternative technologies and these innovations. Are these innovations compulsory to other departments to utilize it? Because for me, to develop it and then say, no, it's optional, you can use it or you can take it or things like that, because we'll find that maybe we have developed a good alternative with the Department of Water Affairs and things like that, and forestry. But is it compulsory for them to utilize this alternative technology? Or maybe they will continue with the old, because it's very difficult for people to move from the old habit to a new habit. And they will raise a lot of issues as a delay tactic. I think that's my question. Thanks very much.
I'm
going to limit the second round. I will limit the second round to only one question per person. I will start with the second round. Is that so that they respond? I just want to understand. You talk about the issue where we don't have any beneficiation.
Titanium.
Why? Can you explain? Why are we not? From that, I think that is the that will be my only question. And the comment is that on my side, I think it's going to be important
for the Department of Science and Technology as a department, particularly your offices, the DG and the DDG, seek a meeting with the Department of Education, I mean basic education, up to and higher education, precisely because my passion and my interest is that how do we ensure that we develop scientists from that, and what is then, how would you then assist them in tapping onto those skills that may be there from that level of basic education. I don't want to talk about the early childhood development because I'm not quite sure as the country how far are we on that, because I would strongly believe that it is that level. But let's talk about the basic education. Those were my two, and I will allow Honorable Smith and Honorable Shin, you are the last, and we close, we allow the department to take one. Yes.
So I'm not quite sure what the issue is, actually. We are here to interrogate reports, and the meeting closes at one. So as I see, it's 11:45 now. I'm not quite sure the one question and session.
I will.
There's one outstanding question, which is innovation award. But anyway, so that's one question, just to repeat.
Okay.
The question I have is, if you look at page 133 of the report, annual report, this is actually, it's not the most serious issue because you've got a keen audit, but nonetheless, the audit in general does raise two issues regarding the performance management system, and he, instead of giving a tick, he gives you a cross against item 14 and 15. In other words, the information systems were not appropriate to facilitate preparation of performance reports accurate and complete. And the second one was there are not adequate control processes and procedures to ensure accuracy and completeness of the reported performance information. So I'm just going to put it in the form of a statement that I presume that in the next annual report there will be ticks against each of those. So it's not a question, it's just a comment. So the question is, Chair, although it's not part of the annual report, I must say there is a rule in Parliament that the departments are meant to answer members' questions timelessly, and the period is to be given 10 days. 10 days are meant to answer all questions. Just to say that I'm submitting questions to the department that are not being answered in 10 days. I have a question outstanding from July. So just to say, can the department up that element of this performance as well? I'd be very happy, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My question is based on page 36 of the annual report. We're talking about the Space and Space Science and Technology Program developed a comprehensive funding plan and long-term innovation program. And you say that this hasn't been developed due to human resource constraints. We're now sort of, getting quite close to having to get our ducks in a row on Meerkat and Skynet. Just wanting to know what the human resource constraints are and what's being done about it, and whether this new cabinet task team has going to have any impact on that. Thank you.
Over to you, DCG or PG.
I'm going to take I'm going to take the very easy question. I know the answer to it. There was a question that was raised around the figures related to the unemployed science graduates and the ones that have been absorbed into the national youth program that is being run by the broader program. I must indicate that the figure on 92 relates totally to the number of interns. And the figure of 124 relates to the number of youth that were drawn into national youth programs. And the distinguishing factor there is the internships actually give youth a job. But your national youth program is about giving them exposure to work opportunities as well as events within the science and technology field. And then the other question was about the relationship with water affairs and forestry as one example of where the DSC deploys more affordable, low-cost technology. The way I can describe the work in that area. A sector department like health has to provide primary healthcare facilities, and they will generally utilize very mature technology, nothing risky, because it must work first time. And they will deploy those technologies in clinics and in hospitals throughout the country. But there will be sites that are very remote and rural, where there's no connectivity and so on. And that may constitute 8% of the population. In that particular instance then, the DST will partner with them to look at whether we can find a solution for that 8%. Then our work will revolve around a demonstration, a test case. And then we will make the case two, based on the results, to that sector department. Now, we've discovered a problem that we face. The timing of the realization of the technology demonstration or research results is not in sync with the budget planning processes of your sector department. So you could complete, you know, a demonstration and test case. It will only go into that department's submission to Treasury the following year or the year after that, because then they've got to do a full-scale assessment of, if you deploy it in the full 8%, where does it lie? But that is a problem we're trying to get around through the cluster system of government. So it's not that we can make it mandatory. We have processes whereby it must inform and encourage those sector departments to deploy those technologies. But I can say in this particular instance, we started from word go with almost equal contributions by ourselves and Department of Water Affairs to look at suitable technology for providing clean water in those remote settings. But it's not always the case. Usually we have to find an alternative technology and demonstrate it. But in this case, this is a partnership. This is a true partnership. And the APIS one, I've indicated that government is already deploying it. So in other words, the system developed by the CSR is available. It is available to every municipality in the country. What we cannot pay for is for the full municipal uptake. But what we are targeting is at the provincial level, making sure it's becoming embedded into the system that they're currently using. But we can also send an update on just how many regions are already using APIS. And then, would you like to come in on the others? I'll just give you a general one. On the titanium one, you could take that, or I could just start with by saying we actually have about 3 patents. We have a number of publications, and then that profile of the Centre of Competence gave you indications of how we've already put the building blocks in place, and the research work is actually running.
Yeah. Chair, maybe let me apologize first for coming late. I was summoned last night to attend an urgent joint sitting of cabinet because of the new changes in the cluster system, and the Minister of Science and Technology will be a deputy co-chair, a deputy chair. We've been asked to sit so that we can listen to the issues that we discussed. So my apologies, but I did ask Marjorie to come. I'm not able to respond, Marjorie, to the issue, the first part of Honorable Rukiza's question about the departmental ambitions for the year on the titanium, but I hope that you've captured the essence of the work that we've done, and we'll be more than happy to come to this committee and do a detailed presentation, because we've just done one to the minister. And we have this as an 8-year program with targets, very clear targets of certain stages being completed by 2015 to produce the aerospace-grade powder, which could be taken up by some major aerospace industries. And we are, in fact, negotiating with some of them to be aware of the program and to be aware of the work that we're doing, with an understanding that if we do produce the grade that they need, they will be able to look at South Africa as a potential or one of their suppliers. The second ambition around this titanium for us is not only to just sell the powder, but to begin to produce certain components, both for the aerospace as well as a very attractive market in the medical field, where it's been found that titanium is very friendly on the body. For instance, there's work that's currently being done at the CSIR where they could help in the reconstruction of somebody who has a hip problem for hip replacement. We can use it for somebody who has part of his face damage, and we can put a small titanium shape to reconstruct. So so I think we're very, very clear. We know, in fact, even the size of the market that we hope to get out of the, both the medical, the auto industry and other applications, many, many, many other applications in sports products. Now, a related question perhaps asked by Honorable Dujo around why have we not had ambitions for the titanium. I don't know. I can't answer that question, to be brutally honest. But maybe we had not realized this opportunity. Maybe we had not realized that we probably have ingredients of taking advantage of this opportunity. It has its own challenges in terms of raw material. It's got its own challenges in terms of looking for technologies or to produce titanium powder or ingot or metal from the ores that we have. And maybe we thought, you know, this is not the risk that we want to take as a country, but we have identified an opportunity, and we think that with the stage gate approach that I think the colleagues, the consortium that's working on this, we have a strong opportunity to really convert this into, let's say, intermediate products and food products. The second question of Honorable Dunja around the development of scientists and the meeting that you're proposing, our deputy ministers for education and science and technology have been mandated by the two ministers. An agreement was signed, and they have to report to the minister. There's a task team on both sides to look at the coordination that is required on both sides. So we can always give a feedback on how far we're doing. Because we've recognized that we can work on the downstream honors, masters, and PhD, but we cannot have the numbers we're looking for unless we have a conversation in the upstream and make sure that there are some interventions that we make, and we tend to make what we call out-of-classroom interventions. So we'll not be intervening on what happens in the classroom, but we can look at things like health camps, we can look at things like Maths Olympiad, we can look at how you can perhaps deploy ICT where one teacher in one school can reach a number of teachers. I'm sure you've talked about the wireless mesh network. So there are interventions which we believe as science and technology we can make to do this. Now let me combine the two questions about the clean audit and the comments that have been made by Honorable Smith. The first question around the ticks that are on the wrong side, so to speak, on the AG's letter. This was a new thing for us, and we accept that maybe we didn't pay attention to ensuring two things, as they said. The first one is ensuring that the three documents, corporate strategy, estimates of national expenditure, as well as our annual report, have the same target. So we now have a new kid on the block who's sitting on my left-hand side, Dr. David Makola. He knows that his head is on the block if this problem is not solved. We do have a block in the Department of Science and Technology and a guillotine, so he's worked with the programs and the directors in the DDG's offices, and we've got an outside consultant to help us in making sure these things are aligned on the one hand, but also in ensuring that these are reasonable and measurable targets. So we do hope that next time, hopefully, the ticks might be in other blocks, on the right-hand side, but definitely not on those. We would follow up on this question that you said we didn't respond to. We tend to really be quite strict in responding to these questions. We follow up also maybe from both the minister's office and our office. Our apologies. We try to, as honestly as we can, to respond.
Your responses are very good, but they tend to be slow.
Okay. Apologies for that. We'll try and speed up the issue. And I think there was a question by Honorable Keys around whether we can share this with other government departments by all means, if we are to do that. And one of the things that I've been thinking about, and I don't know if this has anything to do with what you raised, is that maybe one of the unfortunate things in the department is that it's probably one of the few departments that was created after 1994. I don't know if that has anything to do with it. I wouldn't know, but it's a very interesting observation. And maybe we had to develop these systems from scratch, and therefore you were able to clean up. I mean, we had a little bit of a problem in 2005-06 when I joined because of the legacy issues as a result of the Department of Science and Technology having been married to Arts and Culture before. Mm-hmm. So maybe these things have got something to do with that, but we're happy to share what we've done, I think, with the others. And then I think
it's
the last...
our DG.
God created the world in 6 days, but he didn't have any full base.
And then the question from Honorable Sheen around space and the constraint on human resources. I think this is an observation that we have made to say that when an audit of what we have in the space sector was done, this was identified as one of the big constraints. There are a few people who have been working in the area, but they are old and they are now running small shops selling CDs. So our main objective is to bring them back into the sector and probably train the next generation of youngsters. We have identified, colleague Brown is not here, a full suite of interventions starting from school level all the way up to a PhD program, with targeted interventions including having research chairs in the space arena and centers of competence and an accelerated program for engineers in this regard. So on the specifically on the issue you've raised around Meerkat and SKA, having identified this as a major challenge, we've decided that we'll earmark specific research chairs for astronomy. Rob, I don't know if you remember, I think the minister announced, if I'm not mistaken, about 2 or 3 months ago, about 10 research chairs specifically in the area of radio astronomy, so that we can build the capacity in time, so that when the instrument is up and running, the research capacity together with the program which we have, which is called a NASP program. I'll have to remember what the acronym is.
National Astrophysics and Science Teaching Program.
Ah, for the educated people.
National Astronomy and Astrospace Student Program.
Huh? Yes. So what that program is all about is to try and identify graduate students, not necessarily having excellent grades for undergrad, and they take them through a two-year program on astronomy and astrophysics. In order to prepare them. So I think all of these interventions are targeted interventions that are in line with the thinking that we want to have a capacity on these areas. So, Chair, I think I've covered all of the ones that my DDG delegated upwards.
The Innovation Award. I suspect that it's one of those older awards that the BCI runs off its SPI program. Support program for industrial innovation. No culvert. I also got taken the first time I heard it by support program for industrial innovation. And those are heavily biased towards the development end when you're very close to market. This is in the industry context.
thank you. I don't see any hands. Honorable Smith, I hope you won't cut my throat. I know that we are about 20 minutes before the end of the meeting. But I want to thank the department for really the response, which are not just responses for the sake of responses. They're also empowering the committee and also making us to be more interested and try to understand issues and have interest in science and technology. When I was in Korea, what was raised in the meeting, although it was 2 days, is something that I think as the department or as parliament we have to look into, that it's the issue, although it was climate change, but you can't separate it from science and technology, is that how best to ensure that as members of parliament we empower, working with our departments, we empower the ordinary people on the ground to understand the role of science and technology and what is then their role in that. Because science and technology, the importance is about how then as parliament we use that to change the social conditions of our people. And therefore we can't do that without them being empowered. And therefore I think that is the challenge both of us as members of parliament and as the department, that we have got a number of people there who really don't, they only have a cell phone. They don't know what is it that the cell phone can do in apart from answering calls, getting your balances, sending SMSs. What is it that you can do? And I'm raising that because we have got another important area in these 5 years of rural development. What is the role of science and technology in rural development? Two key areas, education, health. And I do think as we are moving forward, we must not forget that. And because for me, it's taking away science and technology to that cocoon of the few, to be a subject that is known by the entire population, irrespective of class divide. But what is it that we think we can do? In that, in the next week meeting, next week in the portfolio committee meeting, I think we are going to get the reports of the annual reports of the entities, and I just want to sensitize, and I want to tender my apology in advance. I will not be part of the portfolio committee next week because I'm going to Washington D.C. on ICT tour or conference, so I will not be here next week. So when you don't see me, I would have loved to be here, but because of the challenges. Having said that, we got your apology, DG. We got your apology, so it was accepted. The session. Thank you very much. With the visitors, thank you very much, and everybody.